Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously.
Sorry?
I've completely forgotten. What do I say?
What do you say? You're Tim. Hello, Tim.
It's been a big weekend, can you tell?
It's been a huge weekend.
Yeah. I'm Tim. We're back in the rugby dungeon for a massive weekend of rugby. It was a huge weekend, but it's been a big weekend in lots and lots of ways, as you will discover over the course of this podcast. I look at JB, who looks like you just had it. You just put your hand to your temple. Like,
yeah, I'm defeated. So I'm usually pretty good on a hangover, not that bad. But even I had to have a little snooze prior to the podcast just to rest my eyes. But me and Phil had a eventful and rather liquid weekend in Bath.
Liquid was the name of a nightclub near where I grew up.
Amazing.
They used to go to the one that would let underage people in, basically.
Liquid. So in Oldham, their local nightclub there is Liquid and Envy. Now, I don't know if they're two different clubs in the same building, but I do like the fact that it's got Liquid and Envy.
Mm. Yeah, there used to be a Liquid in Lancaster as well. I don't know if it's just the same brand or just boring names for clubs. People pick
still,
the same thing.
That Oldham is so cosmopolitan. It's other club, which I've never been to, but I wish I had. It's called Tokyo's.
Wow.
It's a Tokyo. I mean, Tokyo and Oldham are very similar.
I always used to be dubious about... My sisters are a few years younger than me and my brother, and they go to, or they used to, when they were younger, go to a club called Amadeus. Which I thought, that's a dreadful club name.
Amadeus, wow.
Phil, you're looking strong, though.
Thank you. I probably don't feel particularly strong, albeit I'm surviving. It was a very, very good fun weekend. Watching the rugby, yeah. Drinking. What?
Mostly drinking.
What didn't we drink?
Yeah,
the weekend.
That's a good point. Do you feel as strong as a Racing 92 scrum? Racing 92 pack of forwards.
That is pretty strong.
Yeah, I certainly don't have their resolve today.
Mm. No.
Obviously, we're going to talk about the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup semi-finals. We're going to talk about maybe we should dub it the State of the Union, because there's a lot to unpack looking at rugby union more broadly. But let's keep it contained to all the positive stuff. And to let you know, we will have a midweek podcast later this week, looking ahead to round 22 of the Gallagher Premiership, by which time the big match against between Harlequins and Wasps will have happened, and we'll have a much better idea of what the permutations are going into that final round of matches and in the race for top four.
Mm. Yeah, it's getting very real. And it's getting very real for teams who've got to play, three games in a week.
Yeah. A lot of people I know who are neutrals were very, very confident that the top four picture was pretty much done and dusted. Oh,
no, that's cool.
There we go.
Just Phil.
It was pretty much done and dusted. With 20 minutes to go in the Bath-Gloucester game.
Oh, yeah.
And then in 20 minutes later, we still have no idea.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And Bath are very much still in the hunt after that incredible last 20 minutes.
Furious for neutrals.
Yes. But as for the Champions Cup semi-finals, I love this weekend of rugby. I think quarter-finals are my favourite because you get the saturation of games.
Yes.
Of such a high quality. I love the fact that it was Anglo-French in both cases, and I quite like that the final is as well, although I would have loved Exeter against Saracens in the final for so many reasons. The storylines there, the grudge match.
What's going on with your voice? You said club twice.
Club.
And you said something else, loved. What's all that about?
I don't know, mate.
You've developed an accent.
I've gone more Manc. I think it might be my... You know how, like, kids get their accent off the parents quite often? I think I might have got my accent off the kids.
Well, it tells you a lot about how I parent that my child is getting her accent off YouTube. The American accent from YouTube.
I want to talk about Saracens first.
Yes.
I don't want to ask you one question right now, because one thing I noticed in the aftermath of this, quite a lot of stuff which I would say not very rugby, actually. Quite a lot of smugness, a bit of snideness.
Yeah.
There was quite a bit of that going on. I was quite disappointed to see that.
Yeah. I understand why people are upset for the cheating. I just think maybe they saw an opportunity to stick in the boot and it, you know, and then off they went. But for me, I have no time for it. I think watching that group of Saracens men, they're just outstanding, just as individuals and as a team. And all of the nonsense about cheating, yes, they did cheat. We know that they cheated. That has been done. But I still think that they would have been an awesome team. A team for, you know, well, one of the great teams, even if they hadn't have cheated. Yeah, absolutely confident.
Well, that's the question I want to ask to start with. Before we sort of dig into the game against Racing and that semi-final, how do you reflect on the Saracens dynasty, which has now come to an end? 10 years... in the last 10 years, right, here's some stats. 10 Champions Cup quarterfinals out of the last 10 years. 8 semi-finals out of 10 years. 5 finals. 3 titles. And that's just Europe.
Yep.
5 Premiership titles as well in that 10 years. But parking the Premiership for a moment, one thing I think can't be emphasised enough is forget any salary issues.
Doesn't matter.
In that 10 years. Doesn't matter. Because even Saracens financially doping wouldn't touch Leinster's salary or Racing, for that matter,
yeah,
or Toulouse
or Toulon during their title winning periods.
Yeah, they had to do it their own way. I don't think they had to cheat. That's a sad part about it, really. I don't think they had to do it.
I think they demonstrated this year that they didn't.
It's obvious they didn't have to do it by the way that they played. And actually, you know, to come under the salary cap, what would they have needed to have done? Because, of course, the punishment is disproportionate to the crime, as it should be, because that's exactly how you want your deterrence to work. But it might have meant losing a player or two players to get under the salary cap. We're not talking about, like they are now, where they've completely destroyed the squad, barring their very core key individuals. So,
but just broadly speaking, big picture, how do you reflect on the dynasty that Saracens have just ended
One of the greatest club teams of all time.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And it is exactly the point you're making, JB. It's more than purely the just getting in big names, big players. It's, their team is so much more than just the star power that they undoubtedly have because of the way that they're set up and the way that they played. So this game, they were the weaker team, the weaker squad going into this game, and they were minutes away from winning this game.
Away.
Purely because, away against what is a brilliant Racing 92 team.
Brilliant team.
Because they were so astute, so tactically astute, and they played as a unit.
I think Saracens have taught the world of rugby so many different things. You know, how you manage a team, how you get people interested and involved. The project over in Saints, wherever they are, St Albans. Where they've relocated the club, the way that they engage with the community, just everything about them has redefined the way they play. I mean, even now people struggle with the way they play, because you look on Twitter and you look at, you know, what various coaches are saying. It's all about, you know, move the ball to space and this, that, and the other. No, there is a way to play, and that's not how Saracens play. So, you know, everything that they did was creative, including their accountancy, sadly. And they'll be sorely, sorely missed.
Yeah, and they have the penalty is right. The penalty fits the crime, and in my mind, but potentially not the magnitude of the fine, but them getting relegated, I think, is appropriate for their Premiership actions. but they are still one hell of a team.
And let's also remember that it was this Saracens setup, and I'm talking about the whole club, which was the backbone of the success that England have had.
Yeah.
And took England to a World Cup final. So
yeah.
There's a lot of ways you can slice and dice it. I would rather reflect on all of the brilliant players that have come through, the fantastic. And if you're talking just purely Europe, the salary is an irrelevant conversation.
Yeah. I think because obviously as the pandemic, everyone's a bit miserable and whatnot. It's important to have almost like a good news story. And I do see the Saracen story. I mean, I think they behave like heroes. I think they're absolutely awesome. I loved what Brad Barrett said last week about how they had to basically park everything, stay motivated. They know that their fate is sealed in the Premiership, and yet they turn up every week. They dealt with it in exactly the opposite way to how I would deal with it. I mean, I would be petulant.
Toys would have gone straight out of the pram.
They would be everywhere. I wouldn't have filled fixtures. You name it, I would have been an absolute arse. But they were brilliant. They've been brilliant throughout the whole thing, as far as I'm
Richard
concerned.
Richard Wigglesworth said one thing. He said last, when I was chatting to him after the game, he said last week against Leinster made it all worthwhile because that proved to everyone it was real.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
The point that, yeah, take away whatever you want, recalibrate things, we'll still do it. And like you say, they very nearly got to a final.
Yeah. Brad Barrett is the one for me who sums them up so well. You know, getting on a bit in age. He used to be a bit of a joke. Personally, you know, when he was playing for England in the 13 channel, you'd always ask questions like, "Well, if Brad Barrett's the answer, what was the question?" And there was a lot of mocking, and he's just grown and grown and grown in stature, and he accepts exactly what he is. He does it brilliantly, maybe as well as anyone in the world at that thing which he does. And it's the grit and determination. And I think he sums it up probably as well as anyone.
Yeah. And there's lots of people connected with Saracens who... I'm sorry. There's a lot of people that have had little snide jibes and stuff. And I would have preferred a little bit more class, especially when you've got guys like Wigglesworth and Barrett who are coming to the end of that particular journey. And they are legends. And but there are a lot of people I saw, for example, I saw a lot of snarky comments when Jim Hamilton said, "I don't care what anyone says, Saracens are an incredible club." And they're going, "Oh yeah, you got a house, or how much money do you get for that?" But so I've got no incentive, I've got no skin in the game. I'm just very, very fortunate to have spent time around every Premiership club. And everyone as fans has watched them. I've got no reason to bullshit, and I'll just, they are a special bunch of human beings. They really are a special bunch of human beings, and it's an incredible place. And yeah, they got the punishment, that's absolutely right, but it shouldn't detract from what they have done, and we're not going to see them for a couple of years.
When we do, no doubt they'll have the next Maritoji, next year league. They'll be even better.
So yeah, they're cultivating the next Brad Barrett and Dom Morris.
Yeah. So they're right, aren't they?
Yeah.
Although we should have finished that try. Someone should have finished that try.
Or Lewington when he died.
When he picks the ball up and rolls.
Before we get stuck into the games, and just to keep it on the kind of positive vibe, and again, talking about journeys, talk about a 10-year journey. Saracens have had a journey which is now going to end and move on before a rebirth, as they're calling it, whereas Exeter...
just keep on rolling on.
Let's just talk about Exeter for a second. Like, there's guys there that were in the Championship.
Yeah. I mean, my Exeter knowledge from this week is somewhat patchy. But, I can tell you from past weeks, I completely agree with that. They're doing a lot of things. They probably wouldn't like to admit it, but they do a lot of things that Saracens do. They value being together. They value the lads off the field. They don't play in a dissimilar way. It's all about possession and territory and squeezing people and all the things that rugby should be about. And they're awesome, and they're built that squad as well. I mean, that's the difference, isn't it? How they put together that squad to do such a precise job, and to be able to do what they did to Toulouse in these big clubs. Now, it's them winning the European Cup would be it'd be one of the most well deserved wins in a long time.
Yeah, and it would be well deserved, and from where they came from, 10 years ago. The journey that they've taken to get here as a club, as an organisation, is just incredible. And they are two clubs, Exeter and Saracens, who, when you see them, they just love each other, and they love doing what they do.
Yeah.
And you can't... It's funny, because a lot of people in the game do genuinely love the game, but not all. And
I know plenty of lads that just do not care about rugby. They love to play it, but you know, you ask some internationals. You say, "Hey, what do you think of such and such?" I have no idea. I just don't know.
But these boys, they love the game. They love Exeter, and they love doing what they're doing, and it shows.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because there are some clubs that think every now and again there's a little story you hear, oh, there's a rumour coming out of this place, or this person's not happy, or these two guys don't like this person.
Yeah, there's a clique.
You never hear that about Exeter, or Saracens, to be fair. You never hear it.
Yeah.
So you can talk about money all you want, but there's so much more that is irrelevant of finances that you can get right or wrong. And Exeter, oh my word. To go into your first ever Champions Cup final and play like you're not just happy to be there. Just
yeah, I think I do think there's an expectation that Exeter win this game.
Yeah,
like a big expectation.
Yeah,
but equally, that's because we are obviously heavily involved in the Premiership and that's what we watch. I think from Racing as well. I imagine in Paris, and Tim, you might be able to tell me better because you were there this weekend. But they have been building as well. And Racing... Mm-hmm. Racing
the two stories are very similar. So 10 years ago, Racing got into their... Was it in 2010 or 11? They got into their first... They got into the Champions Cup for the first time. And it was only just the sort of 2008-09 they got taken over by the billionaire owner.
Yeah.
And they were in the second division in France. Exeter were in the second division in England. And they've both made their way up, but actually Exeter have faltered a lot of times at Europe, and they've got to one quarter final. Other than that, they've not been very good, and then all of a sudden they've gone right the way to the end.
Do you remember who they lost their quarter final to?
Wasps.
It was Wasps.
Yeah, I was there at that game.
Yeah,
that was my first ever European game. That was, I remember, I text my mum. It was like my first, I think I'd done a couple of games for BT at the just after the World Cup period. And then later that year, when they had too many games to go around, I got another little shot. And I had to text my mum. I said to her, I think she took a screenshot and she's shown me the message since. I basically went, "Mum, I'm having lunch on a table with Lawrence Dallaglio and Brian O'Driscoll." I couldn't quite believe it. But no, it was that. But Exeter have faltered, whereas Racing have reached final, semi-final, quarter-final, semi-final.
Yeah.
They've been building, and they'll be thinking probably they're due more than the next.
Yeah. Do you think it's interesting that...
So I see it differently. I see it,
they lost the final 4 years ago.
A monkey on the shoulder type thing. Oh, that was the Leinster final?
Saracens.
They lost to Saracens.
Did they lose at Leinster?
No, they lost to Saracens, like 7-0 in Owen Farrell penalty kicks, 21-15, something like that.
Cool. Did they? I don't remember that.
Yeah, 2016.
Which, hang on, look, they have lost to Leinster in a semi then?
In a semi final. Oh, no, they might have lost to Leinster
sure
in the 2018 final.
Ah, right, yeah.
They've been to two finals and lost.
Yeah, I knew that I watched them in a final in Krakow.
Yeah.
No, we were in Krakow. They weren't in Krakow.
There was no European rugby final taking place in Krakow.
No, there was not. But we did watch it in Krakow, just to clear that up.
Where was it on?
Irish Bar.
Oh,
surprisingly.
Always.
Of course. I think we were big Leinster fans that day.
Was it in Rome we went to an Irish bar? That was there was one Irish bar in Rome and we managed to find rugby on
there.
Yeah,
we went to an Irish bar in... no, yes.
Was it Rome? Yeah, it was Rome.
It was that weekend where we went to so many different places.
It was Rome, yeah. We had to find an Irish bar for the rugby in Rome.
Yeah.
Because there was a game on after the All Blacks Italy game, but I cannot remember for life.
God bless the Irish.
Yeah. I can't remember what on earth we were watching. I mean, it must have been England, actually. Because it's rammed and it's Six Nations and it's full of English fans. There you go. Mm. No, hang on.
It was an Irish
Six Nations
match. It was Six Nations.
No, because the All Blacks had just played Italy. It'd be amazing
if it was awesome.
Yeah.
They all merge into one.
Yeah. Especially when you're in Rome.
Yes, quite.
And had a couple of Negronis.
I do think they're slightly different. I think that Racing see it's another hurdle to be tripped over, whereas Exeter see it as their destiny.
There is something, like, I was watching in the Exeter game when Toulouse start building a score. They got the two early penalties, and you just think, hang on, Toulouse have been here before. They know, even though none of this squad have been here before, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
they're going to build a score, they're going to just get too far ahead. And then there was something inevitable about Exeter. When they get into the, when they got into the 22, and you, right, pick and go, pick and go, pick and go, 10 metres out, 5 metres out, on the line, try. And they did. They scored 3 tries by just doing that.
Mm-hmm. And so well, they did a lot of amazing work to get to that position.
Absolutely. And yeah. They were brilliant all round. But there is something inevitable about that Exeter play. And so I'm, even though I think there is probably the Racing story is equally as important as the Exeter story, depending on which way you look at it, something does just feel inevitable about Exeter. That they are going to do this, and I'm really rooting for Exeter next weekend. It would be an amazing story if they do it.
I watched that game on French TV.
Yeah,
and you can tell Bonjour Mon Kaiser was one of the pundits, and he was chatting afterwards, and you can tell that there was a lot of admiration from the French guys for Exeter.
Yeah,
And you could tell. I understood bits and bobs, and even though you can't speak a language, when you see someone's face and you pick up the odd word, you can kind of get a sense. And Hugo Mola, the Toulouse coach, when he was doing his post-match chat, I mean, I wouldn't know. Maybe someone can correct me, but I got the sense that he said, we gave it our best and fair play, Exeter.
Yeah.
If I could distill what he said down into what I thought he was saying, I thought he was saying that.
Yeah. And what I liked about the Exeter performance is it wasn't going their way. They sort of had to mould that performance, had to mould that game to the game that they wanted, which I thought was very, very impressive.
Yeah, it really could have. When those Toulouse early penalties go on, they're building the score, they're 6-0 up, you just think, right, this could be going away from Exeter. And they force their way back into it.
Do you want to know a stat as well?
Yes, always.
Love a stat.
Bearing in mind, Exeter really won that game. I mean, they had the game won, but they just put it to bed in the last 20.
Yeah.
In the Champions Cup, the whole tournament, all 5 games before that. No, 7 games before that.
Yeah, 6 group stages plus.
Yeah. In the 7 games prior to that, Toulouse had conceded the grand total of 20 points in the last 20 minutes of all of those games.
Wow. So that shows, because Toulouse are not conditioned like a French team. Toulouse are a serious professional outfit.
Yeah.
That is remarkable.
And Rob Baxter described it as, what did he say? He said he described it basically as like 2 boxers, and how Exeter managed to basically, he didn't say this exactly, but the point he was making was, one opponent sometimes is so tired, they keep fighting, but they're so tired they can no longer put their hands up, and that's the point when you knock them out.
Yeah.
And so Exeter did to Toulouse
what Toulouse have done to everyone.
What Toulouse have done to everybody else, and to not only stop, to not only even it up, and rather than Toulouse being the ones that put the gas on in the last 20, even if they kept the scores like 0-0 or level for the last 20, that would have been impressive.
Yeah.
But to totally flip it.
Yeah,
I guess he's
unreal.
That Simmons try as well.
He's absolute top teams. I mean, there are different ways to win a rugby game, so you do see some lovely, expansive rugby from other teams. But I think one of the easiest and simplest ways to get average players to play great rugby is turn your game into basically a brutal version of CrossFit for the last 20 minutes. And just who can work hard, who can get off the floor more, who can, you know, do all the little things right with an immense amount of intensity.
I loved Rob Baxter saying that. You were probably getting right stuck into your Guinness and oysters or Negroni.
You had a lot of oysters.
We did have quite a lot of oysters. Yeah.
A lot of oysters.
I want to hear more about this in a minute, actually. but I loved Rob Baxter saying exactly what you're talking about. He was actually, the detail they go down to. It's yes, there's set moves, and yes, there's systems that they play through. But actually, a massive part of the Exeter success and fitting into what we're talking about, that they tired to lose out so much, is he said there's so much emphasis put on little things, just getting off the floor quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you, or just, you know, completing a tackle, not just half tackling someone, completing a tackle, because then you've got 20 stone Joe Tacori having to get up from the deck rather than from his knees.
Yeah.
And cumulatively over a game, those tiny little.
Getting off the ground is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
You've got to get off the ground.
Especially when you're exhausted and when you're 20 stone when some of these big boys getting Charlie Faumoina getting off the ground
totally
20 times 30 times
and that's something if like in community level amateur games when people are eventually allowed to play rugby again, if you're a coach of a team and you come up against a bigger side, that's one little coaching point you can say in the week.
Yeah.
Little point for this week: finish every tackle, get them to deck, because make them get up off the floor.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's where the best rugby drills in my mind for fitness are: short, intense, and involve you being on the deck. Malcolms. Anyone familiar with a Malcolm?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah,
Malcolms are brutal. So on your chest, run. On your chest, run. On your chest,
is that just back
run.
And forth?
That's it.
Yeah. Or to the 22, to the 10, out and back.
Yeah. What?
Chest.
No. It's
5,
on the
22, 10.
Well, you can do it anyway. It's all. Yeah. I mean, it's all the same stuff, isn't it? I don't. Do you know when they break up running drills into shuttles? I'm like, why am I using? I mean, just make me run. Why are you trying to make running different? But you start on the halfway. You start on your chest, up to the 10. Down, up. Back to the other 10, down,
yes,
up, and that's
one
rep. So you'll do one rep, two reps, three reps, four reps, and then come back down.
But the way
you do it, right, if anyone who wants to really torture their players, is you make them do the first rep. You go 3, 2, 1, go, and you time basically the slowest player on the first rep, or you get, you know, unless he's ridiculous. And then you've got a benchmark for the rest of your Malcolms, so you constantly want them to be doing quicker and quicker Malcolms.
Yeah, so that's... Because a lot of those drills, you can hide to an extent on that kind of drill, but you've got, if you make it competitive and get the intensity right up there, that's when you get the really good training in.
I wonder who the Malcolm is that was named after. It's like
I know.
Oh, go on.
It's a Super League coach. I think he's Australian, but he's a Super League fitness coach, I think, because Super League went back and did... I think they tried to invent a new thing based on one of their other coaches, and they have done it. I can't remember what it is, but yeah, Malcolm
Who else has got stuff named after them in rugby? There's Gary Owen.
Yeah,
Gary Owen. Gary definitely.
Owen. Do people still use that? Will that still come? I haven't really. It was Bill McLaren used to say, "Oh, he's put up the big."
No,
Gary
no, no,
Owen.
No, 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 no. Gary Owen. Gary Owen's not a person.
It's a place, isn't it?
It's a place.
It's a rugby club.
It's a really windy place.
I just assumed it was an Irish fly half. I used to kick the ball and have it come down with ice on it.
Yeah. No, I think it's like a seaside club.
It's an Irish, from Limerick, Irish rugby club.
Gary Owen, they kick the ball really high.
And that was their signature move.
Yeah, must have been. That, by the way, great knowledge by Bill McLaren, that, knowing how provincial Irish lower league teams play.
Digging like a demented mole there. And who? Oh, there's the Gregan ball. Every rugby club at one point has had a Gregan ball.
Yeah.
Run, scrum half, run wide, pop inside, or switch with a forward.
Yeah. I have no doubt that there'll be something based on one of the Saracens boys regarding money soon.
I can't think. If you know of any other moves or drills that... someone in
Rangy must have been a person.
Rangy,
I was just thinking, because that's one of those moves that every club knows what a Rangy is.
Right. I mean, there's even a rugby player called Rangy. Rangy Chase.
So yeah, I don't think it was made.
Maybe
after,
he was named after the move.
Rangy Chase. Right. Well, you see the way he plays. I mean, when he was playing well, I think he signed for.
If one of you two have another kid, call it
Rangy.
Dummy switch.
Unders.
unders or overs.
Overs! Yeah, I think Rangy Chase is signed for Hull, Ionians, or someone like that. He sounds for a union team up north, I think.
So I'm just looking here. He's listed as playing for Doncaster Rugby League.
Did I say Doncaster before?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's not a rugby union club. But yeah, he is playing again.
If you're listening right now and you're expecting a child and your surname begins with a P, I have the initials DNS.
DSP.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah, just back to Rangy Chase.
Of course.
So he, apparently, did he get banned from rugby league? He wasn't playing in rugby league. I'm not going to say he got banned because I don't want to say he did when he didn't. But yeah, he was working in a service station for a little while, waiting to get a new club. And that must be his new club. But look him up for... He's got his highlight, and he is dummying the ball on basically like a scissors move, or whatever they call it in rugby league, and it is phenomenal. The way that he moves his hands is phenomenal.
Is that the one where you dummies and loops the ball round his back and takes it out the other side.
Oh, he might do that. And he also does a thing where he passes, but he wraps his arm around the ball. Does that make sense? So the ball stays still, you pass, and then you catch the ball again. Does that make sense? He sort of does something weird. You've got to see it. It's very hard to explain.
Yeah.
But incredibly talented man.
Oh, one thing, French television, while I remember, I just loved hearing them say the English players' names. Jack, they loved Jack. No, they loved Jack Noel.
Noel.
Noel. Noel. Noel. It was great. And Simons. How good are those Simmons brothers?
Oh my God, they are so good.
Any danger of an England call up for Sam? Joe, even Joe.
Well, either of them.
Either of them.
I don't know. It's so hard for any fly half to break in past George Ford and Owen Farrell.
Yeah. Well, I do think George Ford should be at risk soon. You can't play for Leicester Tigers forever and still expect to be... Anyway, we won't go into that. But still. And he's the future. I mean, he's a young man, and these are the two.
George Ford's, what, 26?
No, I think George Ford's. Yeah. Maybe he is a bit younger.
Maybe 28. I think Farrell's 29, and George is a year younger.
So next World Cup, Farrell's what? Early 30s.
Both in the 30s. 3 years away.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It is fine. Yeah. It is fine. He's going to be unlucky.
Especially when Owen Farrell's not going to get many more
27.
Miles on the clock in the next year, is he?
Yeah, true.
That is very, very true.
Other than playing Six Nations and then Alliance Tour.
I was thinking there was some talk had Saracens got to a final, they were going to really be pushing that if they won it, they should be allowed to defend the title next year, which would have been the ideal situation for those players. Just playing Champions Cup, then Lions.
Six Nations, Lions. I mean,
it's Six Nations,
Cup.
Lions, yeah.
If that was genuinely an option, you'd see Leinster try and get themselves done for salary cap and cover fringes.
Relegate us.
Sorry if I'm not conversing with you as well as... Oh, there we are. There he is. Look at this. This is Rangy Chase passing the ball to himself. Just watch that. You blink and you'll miss it.
Oh, my word.
That's like what Bod did, something a little bit similar to that. I want to say against... Was it against Ulster or was it against Wasps? But
I think it was Ulster.
He passed over. Was it Dennis Hickey's head?
Yeah, so we got Dennis Hickey to come on a really hard line. And then he just lobs the ball over Dennis Hickey's head, runs around Dennis Hickey, catches the ball and scoots in for the corner.
Well,
doesn't score.
Yeah, so it's the greatest try that was never scored.
No, it's not. The greatest strike has never scored. Oh, or was it scored?
No, it was not scored. He gets tackled.
No, no, the greatest strike has never scored belongs to Sean Lamont, when Carlos Spencer turns his back to the defence, kicks over, regathers his kick, and then Sean Lamont gets tackled in the corner.
Tackles him? Tackles Spencer?
They both played
for Northampton.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the greatest try, never scored, in case you're wondering.
Second greatest
try. The greatest try ever scored... was also Carlos Spencer.
The one where he ran it into the corner.
When he ran it into the corner.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we could clear that up.
Yeah. So you've listed the second greatest try ever scored. Never scored.
No, I think, well, you know.
There's two great non-try scoring tries.
Let's agree on that.
Tim, you were there at La Défense Arena.
Yes.
In Paris. Just describe the setup and the...
Yeah,
just how it is to be there.
But before that, so coming into land at Charles de Gaulle, as I landed at the very end of the runway, the first when they hit the reverse thing on or whatever, the thing they do is when they put the brakes on. I don't know how they do it. You'll know, JB.
They reverse the thrust.
Reverse the thrust. Right, there you go. I wasn't confident. Yeah. I thought I was saying the right thing, but didn't want to sound stupid. I looked out my window to the right and I saw Macron's plane. The Republique.
Oh, right, sorry. I was like, what, the shirt sponsor? Freaky.
Republique Française, and it had the steps up ready to go, and it had some black, like, SUV vehicles dotted around it.
Awesome.
And stuff. And, you know, it was exactly like the one that everyone kicked up a massive stink about the UK having.
Yeah,
a little while ago.
What were we going to call it? Blair Force cool. One, we were going to call it.
It's cool.
It was awesome. Yeah, so when we were flying into Marseille, the awful town that is, On the way in, we saw the French display team in a diamond formation in the air go past our aircraft.
Oh, wow.
That was pretty cool.
I'm sure they did that just to welcome you in.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
Well, there was probably some rugby royalty on that plane.
Who?
At the time, coming into Arno Marseille. Oh, no, it wasn't. I was thinking Monaco, but...
No, worry. No. Oh, wait, no. It was Marseille.
Yeah, the other plane.
The other plane. So anyway, that stadium, oh my God, it's ridiculous. It's you've been to the Manchester Arena, so it's sort of similar to that. Although on the outside, it looks like the Flight of the Navigator. You know that movie from the 80s?
No.
It looks like someone's landed a big UFO in the middle of Paris. This futuristic bubble type thing on the outside. But it's if you've been to the O2 in London or the Manchester Arena, it's a bit like that. It's insane. It's insane. It's everything I hoped it would be and more. What I did like was the way that the team enter. Oh, one of the best things was after the game, there's a car park underneath the ground, underneath the
amazing, yeah,
underneath the pitch, and so you get all the racing players and the owners and stuff coming out in their cars and seeing these very, very well-to-do French guys in incredibly nice suits and their very beautiful wives in the passenger seat coming out in their procession of incredible sports cars was awesome.
I bet it was.
So good.
Is Yannick Nianga still director of rugby there?
Yeah, I chatted to him before the game. He was awesome.
He's ace. Just on Racing, okay, the amazing thing about Racing is, like you said before, they were bought when they were quite low down.
Yeah, and their old pitch was horrible.
Yeah.
I worked on that. I know, because they must have only moved grounds maybe 3 years ago.
So?
2 years ago.
With that in mind, which club can you think of in the English leagues with as much history which would be cooler for you to buy and turn into the next Racing?
Oral.
Oral.
No, they're too low down,
the
aren't they?
If you did, I guess you're going to have to go with location first, because if you did buy Oral, you'd have to build the La Défense Arena basically on a lay-by on the M6.
And this is in Paris, isn't it?
That's cool. In Paris, so that helps a lot.
You need the city as well, don't you?
So Richmond
is probably
Richmond
the one, isn't it?
Richmond would be cool, actually.
Richmond would be cool. There might be a northern team somewhere which you could... I mean, there's not really many places I want to visit that much. Sale. I mean, actually, Phil, Sale went over to Paris to look at their stadium. So whatever they might not be able to build there now, because some nimbies won't let them build, was going to be largely based on that, which is a real shame. But we will never see it now, will we, Phil?
I'm not sure Sale have got the budget to build something.
I'm pretty sure they do. Pretty sure they have exactly that budget.
So Sale, they lose between £1 and £2 million a year?
It's play money, isn't it?
It's a
toy money.
Do you know how much? I've just looked up how much the La Défense Arena was to build.
How much was it to build?
Is it like 700 million?
Not that much. It's 360 million euros.
No, I tell you what.
Sale.
So 360 million euros. However, on the giant screen, my hotel room was the window was looking, was right about 50 metres away from it, 100 metres away. So there's a giant screen outside, probably as big as the one inside, just showing shots of Racing playing and all the sponsors and stuff, but also advertising loads of gigs. And like Iron Maiden are there next summer. And
awesome.
So it's not just a rugby venue.
Well, it's
venue.
A shame that you went when you did, because after the game, they'll open it up for fans.
Yeah.
And they have a good old beer.
They turn the end opposite the big screen into a big bar and nightclub, basically.
And they have a band playing and whatnot.
Awesome.
Yeah, so back to La Défense Arena, which should be built in Sale, but can't be. I'm sure it has some ridiculous record for the most amount of planning objections. Like, seriously, it's like 700 different planning objections that they had to, like, and permits they had to pull and all sorts. Because you're building in the centre of Paris, which is, you know, and they're French. So you can imagine all the hurdles that you've got to do.
Yeah, but also, because it's in France, if you're a billionaire, you've got enough money to pay off all the... Yeah. All the government officials.
There are ways, and of course, Simon Orange and Steve Diamond and all the good people at Sale would never do that, but they do have to still contend with the same kind of idiot that would write a complaint to the Paris authorities, writing complaints to the Sale authorities.
Yeah. Well, one thing I loved, when the players, when the Racing players arrived, So I was doing the pre-match interviews and stuff, and the lights were on and everyone was milling around. All of a sudden, the lights went off. This booming music started playing and all the flashing disco lights came on. This is like an hour and a half before kickoff. And I was like, all right, they're just testing it out. And then a load of Racing players that evidently, as it turned out, weren't in the matchday squad were on the pitch and formed like a guard of honour. And then from the opposite side from the tunnel, because there's this big car park area underneath and around, the Racing players that were playing came through in their tracksuits from the opposite side, halfway on the other side, and walked across the middle of the pitch with all of the other Racing players clapping them, with all the booming music playing. And I didn't need to translate some of the music, because even with this French rap song, there's a lot of, as it turns out, British swear words that translate quite well into French. And to the point that it was Ed Jackson doing a little bit for Channel 4. He just got told, no, 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 no.
Can't do it now.
You got to stop. Do it again in a minute. And they walked across down the tunnel. It was so cool.
Well, building their own atmosphere, basically.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And the little thing, the big screen, you've seen it before, when they announce the teams, and they go, number one, this player, number two, that player. There's a shot of each player in their Racing suit. They've all got their shirts undone and their tie a bit
obviously
loose in their suit with the badge on, and Machinot in his suit on that big screen. Oh, just looked incredible. Great.
Yeah, so did they wear their white jackets? So they used to wear white jackets, didn't they, with their kit before they
kicked off? No, not this time.
So, yeah, I might introduce team cravats. I think that'd be quite novel thing for Tok.
For the Egg Chasers team or for Tok?
Ooh, that's a good point. One of the two. Yeah, if Racing can have jackets and suits and whatnot, maybe team cravats?
Perfect.
That'd be excellent. So back to your rap thing, Tim. Yeah. France had a bit of a problem a few years ago, maybe a decade or so ago. I don't know if it's still in existence. But there was a law which said French radio stations had to play a certain amount of French language songs. So you've only got a certain allowance of English songs before. But what happens when your rapper starts swearing in English?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you've got a problem, haven't
you? They wouldn't like that.
No, because is it French? Is it English? Mm. And they'd hate it because you're diluting the Francophone culture.
Mm.
Yeah, there's similar things in French Canada.
Is there?
Yeah, because I know a few people. So the company I work for
had a hugely successful hospital there.
Had a hospital there that we built that were to varying degrees of success. But guys and girls from the UK who went over there they were mandated to have French lessons, and they had to be at least 50%, I think it's 51% of the written form of communications had to be in French.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Anyway. So
anyway.
That has nothing to do with rugby. There you go, a little factoid.
The stadium's incredible, and we will have to go there when we can.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So did we learn anything about Racing which we didn't already know?
Their ability to come back, because it was the 76th minute, and yes, we know that Vakatawa and Finn Russell and Imhoff are class players,
yeah.
But for them to do that under the sort of pressure that they were doing it under in the 76th minute of that match was incredibly impressive.
And I'll add to that and say something else we learned about Racing, well, specifically about Finn Russell. Finn Russell is a much more balanced fly half than he's ever been. He was doing a lot of the nuts and bolts. He put in a couple of massive hits as
he
well.
He put a big hit on, who was it?
It was a Good.
It might have been
someone that was good,
smashed. Yeah. I couldn't believe that it was Finn Russell.
And he kicked a lot, tactically.
Yeah, I think, you know, even though he falls out with Scotland continually, if Scotland used him correctly, as in they utilised him and weren't an absolute arse to him on occasions, they would be getting an awful lot more out of him now, because he's massively improving. It is an example of where a player needs to get out of wherever he is and develop.
He's been called the sort of flat track bully type, like, as in he'll have an unbelievable game against Georgia in a 50-0 win.
No, I
think he's got at the minute, if you again, I'm basing it just on the last couple of weekends, but if you had to be a betting man, you'd go, well, I reckon Warren Gatland will take him instead of Johnny Sexton.
Well, if he wins a European Cup, I mean, he's a hell of a guy to have about.
Yeah.
He's completely different to everyone else.
I think he will definitely travel.
Yeah, he has to travel.
He'll definitely travel.
Whether he starts a Lions test. But
Farrell bigger, Russell, that's a pretty balanced trio, that.
Bigger, yeah. I think, is struggling a bit. I think Ford...
It's just Northampton is struggling.
Yeah, but Gatland knows bigger. He loves him, doesn't he?
Bigger. I love bigger more than you.
The international games are going to matter more. If there's a Six Nations, that'll be where the decisions are made.
Yeah, the question will be whether Finn Russell is good enough to push Farrell to 12.
No, here is the question. Here is exactly the question. Is bigger good enough to start a test? Because if he's not good enough to start a test, he is good enough to start a test. Is he going to start? And the answer is no. And if he's not going to start, you don't really want him to be doing anything else. Does that make sense?
But another question is, if Farrell was injured or gets suspended for 5 games,
yeah,
would bigger then start? It's kind of going back to remember when we were having the conversations about Sippers, whether he should be in the squad or not, and people going, he shouldn't be a number three, because if Farrell goes down, you actually want someone else that's a bit more like Farrell to come in.
Yes.
Rather than having someone who's very different.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that, maybe.
Is bigger of the tens, is bigger most Farrell-esque?
Farrell's most bigger-esque. They're basically the same player.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Whereas Finn and George Ford, for example, are probably a bit more similar.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone similar to... I think George Ford is... Yeah, probably.
No, actually, I think that's right.
But I think Finn Russell is unique. He's uniquely talented.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. I think so is George Ford, in fairness.
Yeah, they're both predacious.
I'll tell you where they are very different. Finn Russell is probably different to any other fly half that we've talked about. Finn Russell is uniquely chilled
Hang
out.
On a minute. I think I know the answer to this question. Of those four fly halves, who would you most want to go on tour with?
Oh, Finn Russell.
Finn Russell.
By a mile.
That is a real thing. That has to be a huge tick in the box, that.
Matt Stevens, James Haskell.
Do you want to come out for a drink, George? No, I'm watching more game film. Or Owen Farrell will just be kicking all day. And Bigger's pretty intense himself. I mean, you're going to need somebody who's not that intense.
Yeah.
But this is going back to what you said. You need people need to get out and find their own place. Finn Russell has found the perfect place for him because they value what's unique about him and they just let him be him.
Yeah.
So do you know what? If you want to go out on the, piss, go out and enjoy Paris.
If you want to,
as long as you do your job.
If you never touch the weights bench in your life, and you're 5 to 10 kg of bad weight, more heavy than you should be, that's fine. If you're Finn Russell,
here is a little thing which it might be true, it might not be true. Someone's going to have to look this up. But you said, go on the beers before, go enjoy Paris. I am almost certain Jamie Roberts was the only player who was allowed to live in Paris. All the others had to live outside of Paris and commute in for that exact reason. They made them live somewhere else.
Don't
Jamie
enjoy
Roberts
it too much.
Was allowed to live there because, well, he's a doctor and he can be trusted.
Oh yeah.
So absolutely. I think the stipulation of him moving was, I want to live in Paris. Cheers. But someone will need to confirm that.
Yes.
But part of the reason that I don't know, again, only they know exactly what went down and the people that were in that room. But I think from what I understand is Finn Russell fell out with Scotland because he joined the squad late because he'd been doing so well in club rugby, got to a final. It was the final against Leinster. He talks about it. So he got to a final, turned up at Scotland camp, and they'd already made decisions about
without him,
what the code of conduct was. And part of that was no beers.
What?
And he was like, yeah, I'm part of the senior group, and I would never have allowed this.
Who signs it off?
And he just played on the
Yeah, he just played the on the Sunday, yeah.
Travelled from...
Got there on the Monday and thought, I've just been in a final. I've just had a travelling. I want to have a couple of beers.
Yeah.
And so, and does it matter...
See my mates.
Does it matter how many beers I choose to have? Because I know I'll turn up and do the job.
They have all sorts of weird codes of conduct. So they... I can't tell.
Someone was talking about that. Some rugby player was talking about that recently. They were saying, who was it? Oh, it was Ollie Devoto. It was Ollie Devoto speaking last week, and he was talking about, it was Will Greenwood was interviewing him. Uh-huh. I saw a little clip, and Will Greenwood asked him about what the importance of drinking in Exeter, and he went, do you know what? This is Ollie Devoto, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, if you've had a great game and you've played a massive part in a big win, have a few beers, if you want.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, we
force it down on them.
He basically said we get treated like adults,
and we behave like children. It's a great compromise.
Yeah,
exactly how it should be.
That's how it should be. And he said, just the responsibilities on the individual. You know, you've got a job to do. As long as you do your job, no one's there telling you what you should do the rest of the time.
Cheapest tricks by coaches that, yeah, we'll get the senior players in to make some rules. And then they make the rules, and the coaches can hold you to your own standards. Then, but then everyone, even though you're making the rules, you all want to look like, you know, the good boy to the coach. So yeah. You come up with these ridiculous things which you know you just shouldn't be doing, like, oh, no beers and no fun and lights out at 10. No, none of these things. No, stop it.
That's the only measure. It's turn up on time in the right. State of mind and physically to work and...
Turn up on time is a big one, isn't it? Turn up on time is a huge one.
Of course it is.
If you train at 10 o'clock, you're out at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one. Everything else is whatever.
Do you know what? Pretty much. Yeah. I think.
Do we discuss the final or do we discuss... Actually, we have not really talked about any rugby. Let's talk about the rest
I haven't really heard... I want to hear about your weekend in Bath. Just briefly, give me the little rundown on Bath.
Yeah, so because of this awful pandemic, which we've all got to put up with, and these ridiculous rules which we've all got to put up with, do you know what I really don't like about the pandemic? Being ordered around by waiters. I mean, I don't like it at the best of times when people tell me what to do, but now they've got the law with them. Like, you can't do anything, can you?
But some of it...
Some of them love it.
Some of it's the law, and some of it's not. Some of it's guidelines, and that's the bit I'm struggling with.
We had the most incredible excuse for being kicked out of a pub. So we were asked to leave a pub that we were in because
it was 10 o'clock, yeah?
Because this was middle of the afternoon. because one of the lads did something wrong, and his penance was to finish his pint from his shoe. And the bouncer and the manager came over and said, we're going to have to ask you to leave. And we said, why?
Is this inside?
Outside.
We're outside. We're in a beer garden area outside. Right. Yeah. Massively social distance. It was all really incredibly safe. And the reason was because necking a pint from your shoe is against coronavirus guidelines.
Guidelines.
He honestly said it with a straight face. Like, you show me the guideline. Show me the rule where it says.
Luckily, we were leaving anyway, and we definitely had the upper hand in leverage because we owed them about 150 quid by then.
Yeah, because it's table service. So we've racked up a massive tab.
Yeah, so we we arrived at 12 o'clock on Friday, and me and Phil then had a different bar every 40 minutes booked. So I did all the booking like the week before. So we had everywhere booked in 40-minute slots. We went an hour, then 40 minutes, 40 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it was, up to 5 o'clock, go home, have tea. 40 minutes, 40 minutes, 40 minutes, 40 minutes, up to 10 o'clock, go home, sleep, wake up in the morning.
Where did you stay? Little apartment on Pulteney Street?
No, we had a whole Georgian house. Yeah. Wonderful.
Georgian townhouse on Charlotte Street.
Oh, amazing.
Lovely. So everybody, of course, the whole world is currently in Cornwall. The whole world. So we weren't meant to go to Cornwall. But we just, you know, for £600, you get a rubbish hotel somewhere. So we didn't do that. Instead, we spent half that amount of money and booked our house for 16 people for four.
16 people for four.
Sleep 16. I mean, I wouldn't like to be in there with 16.
Six, it would be a squeeze. Yeah. Five bedrooms each with at least two beds.
But the regulations, you can't have 16 people in a house, it's just underneath. You can't drink out of a boot.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Can't drink out of a shoe. Can't have that.
Exactly.
And then in the morning, we had haggis for breakfast with some Bloody Marys and two bottles of Prosecco. And then we started it all over again with 40 minutes, 40 minutes, 40 minutes game, 40 minutes tea. Oh, no, two games, back-to-back games.
Yeah.
Had some tea and went out again for 40-minute slots.
I did bath in the wrong order. I did.
And we saw David Flatman.
Yeah.
So we had a nice glass of wine. We had a nice glass of Assyrtiko.
Yeah,
with Flats and Matt Powell.
Matt Powell, yeah. Who made up our six, our group of six.
Yeah.
Lovely.
It was great fun. JB organised everything impeccably well. And he also hosted impeccably well because he planned the evening meal for the Friday night and cooked us an incredible breakfast on the Saturday morning as well.
Well, it was a triumph of logistics rather than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Impressive.
So, yeah, very, very good fun.
What a town.
Yeah, I did it wrong. I was there, so I bought my first house there. Me and Nick, my brother, was playing rugby at Bath. I was doing a Masters. And we were looking at our student rent. And we went, oh, balls to this. We got one of those 100% mortgage things.
Yeah,
and
which you could do in those days.
Yeah, and I loved being there when I was a student. But after that, it was like, no, this isn't fun. Being, 22, 23, out in the... Nah. But it's the sort of place I can imagine living now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I want to live there.
Mm.
I'd like a place there.
Like a home.
A place there, yeah.
Yeah,
that'd be more my thing, having a place there. But, it's just amazing, isn't it? And they have a rugby team, which is amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
In the town.
Yeah, the rugby team is so bloody good too. And, I could see myself living there, actually, walking to rugby. Well, no, because it's nice, but I like the AJ Bell, you see.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's nice enough to make me want to leave.
The AJ Bell and the Rec, they're very comparable grounds. Actually,
it's a better match day experience at the AJ Bell. Better facilities. Better parking.
Better location.
By a river as well.
It's by a river.
Yeah.
In fact, it's not by any...
The Bath ground, is, you can see a bridge and the river from the Bath ground.
Yeah.
And same with the AJ Bell.
It's very, very similar. one of the greatest feats of human engineering, I think.
Yeah, Manchester Ship Canal.
And Barton Locks.
And, and there's an airfield by it as well. Barton Airfield.
Yeah, so Sale Sharks have a private plane. Well, they've got a guy who owns a plane. It's a Sale Sharks on it. So, yes. So, very, very comparable. I don't think Bath could draw me away from the AJ Bell, which is a shame, but it's a lovely city all the same.
Mm. Yes, very, very good fun.
Mm. Do you want to talk quickly about some Premiership action?
No, we're going to do that on the midweek podcast.
Perfect.
MWDP.
So, is there anything you'd want to say about any of the teams? I know we've not gone into done deep dives on the matches, but I think actually, and this was kind of what I found myself thinking when I was chatting to players after the game, is I didn't really ask any question on the match at all, because it's when you get to this stage, it's all about the occasion, the emotion,
the storyline to get the teams to where they are,
rather than about dissecting the actual rugby. That's what I love. That is what I love about this time of year. Like these Premiership games, when we do get into that in a podcast later this week, it's not really about the tactics. It's about nerve.
But that
and
said,
it's about.
I mean, it wasn't a good game. Objectively, it wasn't.
Oh, Saracens Racing was not a good game.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. I loved the struggle.
Yeah,
I loved the fights. I loved the scrimmaging. I thought scrimmaging was very, very high, very high level.
I can tell you because I had my Garmin watch on. My heart rate was all over the shop. I was so tense.
Yeah, that Saracens scrum as well. Bearing in mind what they did to Leinster, and they're a phenomenal outfit, Leinster, and they beat them up. As far as I could see, the Saracens scrum is creaking badly.
Yeah, they were under some pressure against Racing.
I mean, in the last 20, because...
Throughout the whole thing?
No, it was pretty 50-50 most of the game.
Yeah, but, I mean, just looking at what they did to Leinster, if your strategy is to out-scrimmage someone,
they can take
that weapon away...
I'd say it was even most of the game.
Yeah.
It was the last 20 when Racing brought their replacements on and Saracens were keeping going with Mako and Vinnie Cock and Jamie George. They kept them on for... I think they changed Barrington after about 68 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it was only when Racing scored that try at the end that they took off Jamie George and Wilson Croft
finished the game on the flank, didn't he?
Yeah, Wilson Croft wasn't on the
flank. Oh, no, you're right.
But
yeah.
they could have still bought off Jamie George, if that makes sense. Jamie George was still on the field if Wilson Croft was on the flank.
Yeah, sorry.
Damn it. Damn it. But what a shift, by the way. What a shift for three front rows to go.
Yeah. I know.
Basically, almost the whole 80. Yeah. I wonder if we're doing the front row thing wrong. Because they weren't playing, from what I can remember, they weren't playing a bunch of jokers. They were playing Racing. And they still did, you know, they were still pretty effective.
Eddie Benarouse, he's quite handy, isn't he?
He's all right.
Come here and shout. He's
oh
okay.
Oh, my God, he was
he's
good.
He's a freak, that guy.
He was so good. And his line-outs didn't look like pizzas, which were...
I stood near him and looked at him, and it was...
The shape.
That neck.
He's some player.
Unbelievable.
He plays almost as good as he looks, which is unusual. Someone who usually looks that good.
Yeah.
I mean,
him against Cowan Dickey. Oh, my word.
Yeah,
that's a match-up.
Yeah, it's like Max Lahiff. Like Max Lahiff is a very good player for the record. But imagine if Max Lahiff was as good as he looked. Camille Chat is almost as good as he looks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's the perfect shape for a hooker as well.
Oh, yeah.
Do we have to talk about Bristol? We should really.
Oh, my God, yeah. What a great semi-final. I mean, the Leinster-Toulon semi-final was... the actual pitch at Toulon reflected... that game.
I didn't watch it. I didn't watch the game really.
It wasn't great. Leinster rallied towards the end.
Leicester.
Bristol, Leicester rallied towards the end.
Bryce Hume's got a very nice try.
Bryce Hume's got a very nice try. But
Bryce Hume was playing
he should have been
centre.
Tackled. Yeah, outside centre. He should have been tackled.
Leicester's season ends predictably poorly, as they actually deserve. But Bristol with ace.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did.
Very, very tight.
And two teams letting the boys play.
Yeah. I also quite liked it because it was obviously close. The scores reflected that towards the end. But it was actually quite a tight physical confrontation too, which is good because Bristol needs to learn to win in different ways.
Yeah, and to win in the way that they did in the extra time period was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I know I said this last week, but Max Mullins is he is some player.
He's good, isn't he?
He's ridiculously good. He's so good.
Go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, that brought into sharp focus, really, that how good Max Mullins was, and then when both of Saracen's centres got injured and they had to rejig their whole back line, actually what they would have given. I mean, what amazing experience for Manu Vinopola, and Don Morris, for that matter, but what they would have given for Max Mullins.
Yes.
And they had Tom Wolstonecroft finishing in the back row, what they would have given for Ben Earl.
Yeah, God.
Or Tompkins, or Williams, or any other...
Oh, my God, Nick Tompkins.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I hadn't even thought about him when the two centres were going off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, very good point. Well done, Bristol.
Yeah, awesome. It was so good, just the ambition they played with. And I thought fair play to Bordeaux, because to come back the way they did, I thought they were I thought they were cooked.
Yeah.
Ben Lamb seems like a fairly handy signing.
What is the relationship between Ben Lamb and Pat Lamb?
Uncle.
It is uncle.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure it is. I will just say this though about Bristol, something which I mentioned last week. They better win this competition because this competition costs them top four. I mean, they have to win it now, and they've got Toulon in the final. It's going to be tricky.
Yeah, they can do it,
but they can definitely do that.
They can definitely do it.
I think they'll be favourites to beat Toulon. Toulon did not look great.
Yeah, they're massive though. That's the thing. I mean, they are truly enormous, and that does count for something.
It does.
That is a skill in its own right.
Being huge.
Yeah.
And Sergio at number 8.
Yeah. Quality over quantity, but sometimes quantity has a quality all of its own.
That's exactly right.
Genge was robbed of an awesome try.
Was he?
Because of it was called a forward pass. I don't think it was, but he just did a baby rhino thing. He's got his own baby rhino now.
He does,
He's
got a baby. Congratulations.
How do you say his son's name?
I don't know.
R-A-G-H.
You're asking the wrong guy.
R-A-G-H.
I don't know how you...
It's a funny way to spell rhino, but I'm no expert.
Got two of the letters right. fair play, Bristol. Looking forward to that final, actually. That's good. And that'll be in... When is France? Somewhere just outside Paris.
Yeah, but ironically, if Leicester would have won...
Where is it? Where's the final? If Leicester won...
It'd be in Bristol.
The final could have been in Bristol... Had Exeter's final not been in Bristol?
Oh, I see. There's a whole...
Not allowed to have two finals in the same place.
Why?
I don't know.
Just a number of...
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Because normally they do.
Yeah, normally they have the one venue for both. But I think it's because of a coronavirus thing.
Is this like drinking beer from your shoe? It's a rule, but we don't really know.
Yeah. We're not exactly sure. It's in the guidelines.
It's a rule. You can't have that many people descending on one city in consecutive days. So, it would have been Ashton Gate had Leicester won, but then it wouldn't have been Ashton Gate because Exeter are now playing at Ashton Gate.
Yeah,
understood.
So where is the... Just Exeter saying...
Stade Maurice David, which is... Let me find out where that is.
Stade Maurice David?
So it's Friday at 8 p.m. Stade Maurice David in Aix-en-Provence.
Oh, Provence. So central France.
Rosé region.
Aix-en-Provence, which is... Where's the nearest... Okay, yeah, Provence. So not a million miles away. Not a million miles away from Marseille, actually.
Marseille. Ugh. God, I'm not going there now. You have to fly into Marseille.
And it's all completely locked down at Marseille too.
Is it?
Yeah. In typical French style, they were protesting on the streets. All the restaurant owners, as they should be, by the way.
Well, that's the other thing about watching French TV is they're having the same conversations that people are having in the UK, only more so.
Only more passionately.
Only more passionately. The breakfast news that was on in the hotel, I just sort of had grabbed another coffee and it was just in the background, and it was all about the, have they gone too far? Should we all be doing this? Are we? And there's just loads of people very unhappy.
No one's having the conversation over here. Have we gone too far?
No, they're not.
If anything, it's the opposite. Whose life can we ruin more? That's basically what they're asking.
Well, on that, let's briefly talk about... We'll park the Premiership, other than to say Monday night, don't forget, BT Sport, you've got Harlequins v Wasps.
Yeah.
That's a massive game.
Big game.
That is a huge game. And I think of all the ones we've been saying, that there's two teams, you look at the size of pick, full-blooded, a Harlequins at home, Rob Shaw's last game at the Stoop. Wasps have gone fully loaded as well. That's massive.
Wasps do them.
And in a changing of the guard, not changing of the guard, but in an interesting, with everyone fit, Wasps picked Tom Willis in their back row, Thomas Young on the bench.
Oh, yeah.
So Tom Willis is really, really pushed on.
I tell you what, they've managed their squad well. So have everyone available. Launchby's not available, I see. So they've got Gaskell and they've got Will Rowlands.
Oh, Gaskell and Rowlands, yeah.
But, I mean, they're pretty
that's
decent.
That's not a bad... Any team would miss Launchbury, but that's not a bad pairing.
Yeah. So they do have a bit of a... Well, they obviously have a bounce about them. They're second. But I was down at Wasps on Wednesday. Giving them a visit, and I do get the feeling that this is legitimate, and I think it's amazing when you consider how many players that they lost, where they found themselves at the start of the season. They were relegation contenders.
You were able to go down.
Yeah,
I thought they don't let anyone into. I thought they do all remote press conferences and stuff now.
Yeah, well, they train at where do they train? Broad Street.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty cool club.
Yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, I do think it's a legitimate thing. I'd be interested to see how well they would do in a full season where the wear and tear really affects your players. But they've been very, very good with injuries so far, and it's paying off. They've looked after their squad well.
Well, this is a massive game, huge for Quinns as I say, the send off for a club legend.
Do you think they care enough?
Yeah.
I'm not sure they do.
They'll care for this one.
Yeah, but which ones? Like
Quinns.
Just that clique will care, or like the whole...
Well, don't forget, Quinns v Wasps is a traditional rivalry as well. West London.
Yeah, true. Mm. It is. I don't see... Are they at the Stoop?
Yeah.
They are at the Stoop, and they can be good at the Stoop. I mean, the Quinns should be a good team, shouldn't they? Really, they should be a good team. They've got
a lot of talent.
Yeah. They've got a lot of talent. It's a hell of a club to play for. Loads of history. Great place to live.
Yep.
Blah, blah, blah. But they never seem to get it together, and I don't expect that they'll do it this week either. So give me Wasps.
Well, we can talk about that midweek. But bearing in mind you were talking about regulations and stuff, there's been a lot of chat about the future of rugby.
Sadly.
The last few days. Since the announcement, all of the crowds and the extension of the pilot scheme has been knocked on the head.
Yeah.
And community rugby... Below the championship, at all levels below the championship, there will be no competitive matches until January.
Yeah.
At the earliest.
At least January.
So, what the plan was, was to progress to Stage F ASAP. At Stage F, you've got 6 weeks and then you're into playing. They're giving you numerous different windows of when you can play. Fine. One of the windows is in November, which is what I obviously wanted to play in. That won't be happening. So the next window now will be in January. So that's, you know, they haven't said we will play in January. They said that there's an option to play.
We're not going to, are we?
Well, no, not with these idiots in charge. I mean, the idea that for some reason that this in any way benefits any community. I mean, every sports club, whether it be a bowls club, a cricket club, a rugby club, are vital, vital institutions. You can shut them down for a week or two. You can't do what they are proposing. The risk to the players is minimal, and some idiot will think,
"Oh, but you just want nans to, you just want people's nans to die, JB."
Well,
you saying that you just want people's nans to die?
I mean, I wouldn't directly sacrifice my nan. It wouldn't be a simple calculation either. You know, there'd be pros and cons in each column.
I think like this. What is this word society? Whatever gets banded around. What is it? And I think society is a group of people living in the same area, and it only the society part of it, and is a sense of common purpose,
yes,
a sense of common values,
shared experience,
shared experiences, all these physical and psychological things that tie us together. That's what makes it all work. And I just think, and this is a bigger point than rugby, but rugby is part of it. Rugby clubs, pubs, all these kind of community structures. Actually, when you shut those down, you're picking apart. Yeah. You're picking apart what actually constitutes a society.
I'm almost certain the people that are most in favour of this are not a member of a club, are not playing the sport. They're happy to sit back and say, "Oh well, you know, it doesn't affect me. Let's close it." You're right about the society bit, and the point I always make is a rugby club is one of the few places that I will go to, and I can have a drink with a 15-year-old, or I can have a drink with a 60-year-old, and you know, you do have that intergenerational mixing which you don't get. By the way, seems to be that that's very important, because when everyone's locked away, you know, people get particularly lonely, particularly if you're one of the old boys and that is your social, which is you get onto the rugby club every week. It is bloody important.
I was going to say that. How many how many rugby clubs have you played at where the Alakadoos, those old fellas, turn up in their blazers every week, and their life, and I don't want to sound patronising when I say this, because for young people, it gives you a sense of purpose as well. But whether it's a guy playing rugby at the weekend and meeting up with his mates, or whether it's a fella in his 60s whose life has a sense of identity and purpose.
30 years worth of knowledge about teams and events, and it makes a huge difference.
This is the stuff that actually makes us... this is the stuff that makes society work, and I just think we've picked it apart.
I know exactly the type of people that we say, it's not worth, you're selfish, or it's not worth killing Nan, or what. I mean, by the way, utter scare tactics which shouldn't be listened to. But I know exactly the type, and they won't be involved in the game. But that's why that's why they can say it.
They just have a Twitter account.
Yeah, exactly right, and write a blog every 3 weeks. Well, if they can be bothered, because they don't have any work ethic. So
this hypothetical group of people.
Yeah, this hypothetical group of people.
We're projecting onto.
The actual consequences of it are going to be interesting, the consequences of the lockdown. So from a player's point of view, the clubs that have a good atmosphere and a good ethos will stay strong, healthy and fit. Talk H would be definitely one of those clubs. We have an amazing group of lads. And I'm sure when we turn the lights back on at the clubhouse, we will get more or less all of our players back. I'm pretty sure. And I really hope that is the same for everyone. Invariably, players will drift off. But my guess is it might just speed up clubs that don't have a particularly good coaching set or don't have a particularly committed group of lads, which is a shame. But that's, I think, what will happen. There's a financial element, which is really well run clubs, because some of these clubs run like a real business. They use their conferencing facilities. They've got a good bar. Broad Street's probably a good example. I don't know anything about them other than I've recently been there. But you've got a really nice bar there. It's it's a good location. You can see how if they can't open up, that could be problematic for that team. So I think any team which is paying players and has higher expenses are all of a sudden in a lot of trouble if they don't, if they don't open up until January. I mean, what they would do in November is debatable anyway, because you can't fill the rugby club like you used to be able to, a table service and whatnot. It might actually become uneconomical to do so. So, yeah, you've got problems there. I've heard of at least one club that, well, they've lost all their players to a different club because they just won't be reopening. I won't mention them on air, but it's, you know, northwest-ish area.
Yeah.
Before, it was nothing to do with this coronavirus. This is when I was playing, but I was at Manchester when the money dried up.
Yeah.
And Phil, you were playing at a different club in Greater Manchester, so you'll remember because you got a bunch of guys.
We took half a dozen.
You took a load of, of the best players. And the money dried up, and the players went. Which again, one of the things I took from that was this probably isn't sustainable, and you don't have a sense of community and identity that the players are going where the money goes.
Yeah.
Well, here's an interesting thing which I thought the other day. What's his name? Head of the RFU, Bill Sweeney, has got on the phone to all of the regional unions. To be fair, he's made the phone calls. Now, it does seem a little bit like he's trying to scapegoat his mate who does the phone calls with him too. But you know, nonetheless, he is doing the communications part, and he sort of tacitly makes the point that we've become addicted to money. And we've become addicted to, like, you know, for instance, not addicted to money, but we've been addicted to things like bar takings. And there is a good point there, that rugby clubs should really diversify their income streams, and they should do other things in order to run the club. I just don't like the message coming from the RFU, because the RFU is effectively a catering organisation, when you boil it down. They built themselves a whole bloody restaurant in the South Stand, or the East Stand, or whatever it is. So,
and I was going to say, there's a lot of people whose jobs are effectively balancing a spreadsheet of corporate facilities being built.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do think he acknowledges this point. I think he does acknowledge, to be fair, that all of rugby is to rely on that. I don't think it is. I mean, I don't think it is at all, actually. And to revisit a point, now he's saying that we're addicted to takings. The thing which really gets me is the RFU have had so much money, and they do have some substantial assets, Twickenham being one of them. You know, they've got a lot of things which they own, fine. But all that windfall from both the World Cups, which went into community coaches, and obviously all the community coaches just got fired. So all of the investment, all of the money, it's not dissimilar to how professional clubs find themselves when they lose their players or they can't afford to keep up the wage bill. When that investment goes, you don't have an asset. You've just literally been spending money on individuals, and now you've got rid of all of that investment. It's disappeared. Mm. They've blown the whole lot. They've blown all of their money on good people, but it was never sustainable. So not only have they screwed over the people who dedicated their careers to being a community coach because they don't have a job or they have nothing comparable to go into, they've also got rid of all of the money which they generated from the two World Cups and when times were good. Instead of making it sustainable, they ruined the whole thing. Yeah. The whole thing is.
But the problem is, it is
destroyed.
It is sustainable, but only when they can get fans in. Only when you can sell out 80,000 people half a dozen times a year.
Yeah, Phil's absolutely right to talk. And let's just talk about that briefly. I don't understand why the decision is that no fans can go.
Yeah,
I was there at the pilot when at the Stoop there were 3,500.
Yeah, in a 15,000 seat.
In a 15,000 capacity stadium, there were 3,500. And when you say, I mean, God, the vitriol, again, it's just Twitter being Twitter.
Yeah.
The vitriol aimed at anyone who suggests that we should have some crowds in. But I was there in the stadium when they did it with 3,500. And everyone could not have been more spaced out. It could not have been more comfortable. And some people come back at you and say, oh, what about transport? Well, they did it at Quinn's and they staggered the arrival times deliberately to accommodate for that. Anyone that wanted to drive, the parking was free, so you didn't use public transport.
We know about this damn virus. If you're walking to a stadium outside, it's unlikely you're going to get COVID.
Well, being outside in the open air and distanced, I think that's the one bit of scientific evidence worldwide that everyone has consensus on. You're very, 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 very unlikely, very unlikely to be at risk, even if someone has it that's near you.
It's I'd love to go back to a game. I'd love to go watch Sale Sharks play. But no, to me, that's a small price to pay not watching Sale Sharks if we could get the club game back. That is by far the biggest one for me.
Mm.
I tell you what, winter pre-season as well. Good luck motivating the lads for that.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
But there are Premiership clubs. The Premiership, the professional model could be at risk.
Well, yeah, and that's an interesting one. So I had a thought about this the other day, and the ones that I think are at most risk are not the guys you think. It's not like, it's not like Worcester or Wasps or people that, the names of the clubs which come up frequently, obviously they'll have their problems. But the ones I really worry for are the ones that run like businesses. As I kind of mentioned before, like Exeter don't have a wealthy owner. Tony Rowe is notionally in charge. But
he's in charge, but he's not an owner.
He's not an owner.
Yeah. It's owned by the fans, basically.
Yeah.
So they make something like £1 million a match day. They make an awful lot, and now they're losing probably £1 million a month. How do they turn that around? If they don't get fans in by March, it's over. All that good work is done. It's over. So in a way, you might find that the club, Leicester Tigers... I mock Leicester Tigers on a regular basis, but they do a good job of being a business. For the longest time, they were one of the few profitable rugby clubs. They do some things extremely well. Their match day is worth something like six... might be talking about a school. I don't know if it is. But it's worth a lot of money to them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's worth a lot of money.
Well, they bring 20,000 fans in.
Yeah.
Every match day.
I think it's got the big... It's the Kop, and then it's Leicester Tigers stand. It's the single biggest tier stand second biggest single tier stand in the nation. Or is that Newcastle? It doesn't matter, does it? It's a big stand. it's a big stand.
20,000 people bringing a lot of money.
So the Premiership clubs seem to be singing from the same hymn sheet, and Championship clubs and various levels saying that there needs to be a government bailout. And this is where it gets tricky, because... You can't. This is where it gets very tricky, because if the government said, we're going to bail out rugby clubs, then every single organisation are going to say,
bail us out.
Money, please.
Yeah.
Do you want to say something funny? I find this funny. Probably gives you an idea of where the game is. When the pandemic hit, everyone went out and got money. Okay, so the government was giving out money like sweets, and rugby league is in a bad way, but. They've got some wealthy owners too. They can sustain the losses. Most of their clubs, we believe, are actually profitable. And back to my original point I was trying to make before, which is, you might actually get punished now for being a real business because you can't do real business stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Rugby League make their pitch to the Department of Culture and whoever it is.
DCMS, yeah.
Yeah, and they are... Their whole pitch is like, we're a community sport, impoverished neighbourhoods, we do an awful lot, here are the outreach programmes that we do, here's how we give young men a chance, blah, 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 blah. The RFU come in, and their presentation is how much they lost in corporate sponsorship, and therefore corporate hospitality, and could we please replace it? And you think, what are you thinking? All you need to do is write a bid, and Rugby League could do it. why have you come with this? Yeah, we've lost bankers. We can't have as many bankers in our stand. Any chance we can have some cash? No.
Yeah.
There will be clubs fold at all levels. I just hope that they are few and far between. Because I think your point is a very good one, JB, on the clubs that are run like businesses.
Mm.
They have to be businesses. Well, if you've not got a sugar daddy, a rich owner.
Mm. Yeah.
Like... You're in trouble.
Some of these Premiership owners, right? And you know who they are. I won't mention them.
Yeah,
but they could comfortably fund this club for. I mean, they don't want to, but they could do it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Exeter Chiefs can't do that.
Nope.
Exeter Chiefs are going to need an actual handout, and it's because they're a good business. They're a good business. So.
But just I'm just thinking of my old man. He used to play at Wilmslow. He was a policeman in Manchester. He used to play at Wilmslow. And every year, and he lives abroad now.
On the run.
Every year he comes back for the club dinner every single year at Wilmslow Rugby Club. And just think about what these rugby clubs actually represent. And going back to the sense of community and stuff, it's a tragedy. If all of that history and all of those memories and all of those, the fabric that it's woven into people's lives, if that if that is lost forever.
Very easy, yeah. It's very easy to destroy an institution. It's very hard to rebuild them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Manchester is a good example of that.
Yeah.
Manchester is a historic, incredibly proud club.
One of the earliest. I think it was Blackheath, and then it might be Manchester. One of the.
It's not in Manchester. This is one of the chief bugbears. Manchester Rugby Club is not in, it's in a Stockport
it's in
club.
Cheadle.
Yeah. It's not in Manchester.
Has an SK postcode.
Yeah. So the finest club in Manchester, that'd be Toc H. but Manchester are the finest club in Stockport, probably. Stockport's pretty good,
Stockport
actually.
It's a good club.
I like Stockport. I don't think I've ever played Manchester competitively. I've been beaten by them quite badly in a few pre seasons.
But it's one of the oldest. One of the very, very oldest rugby clubs in the country.
Yeah. Although, how many rugby clubs claim that? I reckon I could list about five rugby clubs that claim to be Blackheath,
Blackheath is called the club.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blackheath.
That's the oldest. And then everyone at Manchester when I played there used to be very proud that they were the second oldest. So Blackheath.
Broughton Park claims to be like the fifth or something ridiculous like that. They had the Preston claims to be something. LSH claims to be something. They all claim to be something.
Oh, I found out about the grasshoppers thing, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't remember. I'm going to have to look it up now because it's something to do with it's military, I think.
The
best type of heritage.
I think so, but anyway. So are you saying, because there's a lot of people from, ex-rugby players and very high-profile rugby names have come out and said, urging the government, you've got to do something. My gut feeling is, from a purely selfish point of view, because I love rugby and because actually it could affect, my life.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I want to say yes, but then I just think of where does that leave the country if rugby clubs get bailed out? Everything gets bailed out.
Yeah, cricket, basically every sport.
That's what they've got to do. They've got to make a decision, right? The 30-odd people who are dying every day is tragic, but we can't sustain. It's World War II two levels of spending. It's absolute nonsense. There's not even any real Nazis to fight. it's unbelievable.
We've got to find a way on the balance of risk. We've got to find a way to shield where we can, but to live with it where we can.
Yeah,
yeah.
Kind of like
because it's not going away.
Nope,
not anytime soon.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I love rugby. Don't love paying tax, and there's going to be a lot more tax due.
Well,
and a lot less rugby.
A terrible deal.
What I'm sort of considering with that is, it's actually
move to Sweden.
We've all got kids. They're picking up the tab for this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Jeez.
Send them the bill. What is the grasshopper's story?
I'm trying to find it out. I did know it. I'm sorry. Might have to wait till the midweek pod.
What a tease for the midweek pod.
Yeah.
Well, you've been not quiet. That's not what I mean. You've been very just listening very attentively. But I'm quite conscious that quite often JB and I, particularly the tweet a lot, just sort of write off our opinion. I'd quite like to hear, broadly speaking, what you think.
Is it more in the middle?
Somewhere in the middle. No, you two are nodding along.
Oh, okay, that's a good point.
With one another, and I'm nodding along as well. And early days during the pandemic, I was really, really serious about let's get more information, let's understand what's going on, let's close everything down where we know there's risk. And I think we have at least a level of information now where people are informed enough to make decisions for themselves, and I would like to see rugby at a community level coming back. Not even because I won't be playing other than occasionally the occasional vets game, but it's important to people.
It has a
physical and mental benefit for individuals to be able to play team sports. So I think there must be a way of being able to do it safely for the benefit of everyone. I really do.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Grasshoppers, let's finish on this.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So, Preston Grasshoppers Club emerged when there's a meeting took place. Oh my word! On the 28th of September, which is when this podcast will be out, 1869, A meeting was held at the Bull Hotel in Preston, where the following resolution was passed: that a club at once be formed in Preston to play football with the rugby rules of the game, but without hacking.
Without hacking?
I don't know what that is. And they would be called the Preston Grasshoppers. So this meeting happened, and these gentlemen approached the headmaster of Preston Grammar School, who were given... Basically, I'm just running it down. They had a chat. There was a game, and... Basically, what had happened, the school had a game every year. Preston Grammar School had a game every year called Fireflies v Grasshoppers.
Ah.
Which apparently that game continues to this day. And it was a bunch of old boys of Preston Grammar School and some old boys of Cheltenham College.
Is Cheltenham College a girls' school?
Might be now.
I don't know.
I might have summarised this really badly, but basically... Grasshoppers was one of the teams of this traditional old game.
So who are the Fireflies?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do they still exist? We need someone who's an expert. I know an expert.
Who's your expert?
Byron McGuigan coaches there, though.
Dick Greenwood.
Dick Greenwood, of course.
He'd know a thing or two, wouldn't he?
He knows a thing or two about Preston. And also, what's his name? Our friend on Twitter. What's his name?
Paul Arnold.
Paul Arnold.
Arnie.
Arnie's a coach there.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's wrap this up.
Let's wrap this up. Right, we'll have a midweek pod coming in the feed, so hit subscribe and then you'll get it definitely delivered straight to you. It'll download automatically. That'll be our midweek domestic podcast. You can find him at Jay Beardmore. You can find me at Cocker. Phil is lurking. Thank you for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.